Yes, separate. A mãe se informação. Não, foi eu.
I'm saying now he nice to see you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're just trying to sort out the technology here. We'll be starting very soon.
He's in Pretoria.
I have a sort of thing up.
shall we start? We are switching off our cell phones, huh? In there? We don't have any apologies for this meeting.
Just an apology. Honourable Eric Murray is going to be a few minutes late, but he is on his way.
Oh. I'd like to welcome all of you to this meeting of Portfolio Committee of Public Enterprise. I'll request that we introduce ourselves. My name is Peter Mandeka, Chairperson of this committee.
Disang Muchumi, Secretary for the Committee.
Good afternoon, I'm Gloria Borman, member of the committee.
Good afternoon, Gerard Koornhof, member of the portfolio committee.
Goedemiddag, Cornelia September.
Good afternoon, Aubrey Mukwena, member of the portfolio committee.
Hello, Natasha Michael, member of the committee.
Jake Nikobo, Lead Fund Committee.
Chris Kulule, member of the committee.
Good afternoon. My name is Mlindi Nana. I'm a member of this committee.
Matelo Mbuzana from ESCOM.
Caroline Mafanya from CPE.
You must not introduce yourself. Eric, introduce yourself.
I'm
introducing the mic is not on.
Sorry.
Sandy Hutchings, CPE.
Bear Judgment from the AGSA.
Cardinal Vessels, also from the Auditor General.
Contact advisor for our committee, content advisor
for committee. Sorry for that. Connie. Content advisor for our committee. Mr. Mnitri, sitting next to Eric there, you can just raise your hand. Everybody see here. And I would like to, on behalf of the committee, firstly, congratulate you on your appointment and to welcome you to our committee as content advisor. And I hope that you will enjoy your stay during your tenure in this position. I can tell you that these are all the members of the committee, of course, are all good people, very good people. So they will make your stay here very easy. But if any one of them gives you trouble, you can always come to me. You don't fight with members. I fight with them. I'm the only one entitled to fight with members. But we're really looking forward to working with you, and we hope that you will definitely add value to our work in this committee. Thank you. We have three items on our agenda. That's a briefing by the Office of the Auditor General on the audit outcome for 2011-2012 financial year. Department and the entity. And we have a briefing by the researcher on the analysis, section 32 report. And the committee will then adopt the minutes of the previous meeting. I'll invite I don't know who's going to do it between the two of you, but let's just say I'll invite the Office of the Auditor General to do the briefing. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, Chair. Good afternoon to the committee members. Good afternoon to the guests, to the committee, and all protocols observed. Chair, thank you for this opportunity to present the audit outcomes for the 11-12 financial year on the DPE portfolio. So to kick off, the first thing I must do is congratulate the department on a clean audit. They've obtained this clean audit for a number of years now, and I encourage them to keep up that work. And I think it comes with a lot of dedication and commitment from the department, its governance structures, its oversight structures, and its leadership and executive. So congratulations to the department and those structures. Chair, for this portfolio, I think it will only be fitting for me to say that our focus should primarily be around the sustainability of the outcomes that you see before you. Okay. There are no qualified audits that I'm reporting on today, and those that have other matters that are reported on is matters that, in our opinion, can be cleared up within the financial year. So the focus by management, leadership, and the oversight structures, governance structures, should be around the maintenance of this clean audits and pushing towards clean audits. This morning we've had a similar session with one of the other portfolio committees, and from where I'm sitting with this, it looks like it's going to be a race between the DPE portfolio and that portfolio in getting to clean audits by 2014. Because they're sitting in a similar situation where it's just a matter of a push. For me, in a year's time, you should be able to have all your entities in this portfolio clean in terms of financial reporting. So, yes, there is a bit of work from the oversight, especially governance with reference to internal audits, but there should be no reason why this portfolio should not be sitting next year when we do this presentation with all the entities we include. Okay. Chair, with those words, I'm going to hand over to Mr. Vessels to do the detailed presentation for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, members of the committee, other guests invited. Good afternoon, and thank you for this opportunity. I think the real detail of our presentation begins on the fourth page where we provided this colorful chart. We try to make it, I think the use of colors has become anonymous with the office, where our green color is what is strived for, because that means the clean audit opinion, this is the one where we want, this is the one where we can slaughter the cows and be really joyful. The yellow color is where we've got either findings on predetermined objectives or compliance matters. As we go down in the color scale, we get in a pink color for qualified audit opinion, and then a red color for a disclaimer of audit opinion, and a blue color we had to add for the audits that have not been yet been finalized and tabled in Parliament. And as part of our presentation, we're not going to deal with those blue ones because the documents are not yet published, so they haven't been presented to Parliament yet. To come to the detail of why we get to the yellow slides, we'll go down lower on that page, where we provided crosses where the applicable findings correlate with the yellow findings that we've raised above. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It's on my. It's only on my index. So we don't have any chairperson, I think, just to put it very clear. For the year, this year, the current outcomes is 11-12. It's the furthermost right-hand column, where you can see that the majorities of the entities are in the green category, and then there are those that are in the yellow category, where issues were raised on compliance with laws and regulations. Now, I think as Kavesh indicated, the compliance with laws and regulations or findings on predetermined objectives are the areas where we can do something about it. It's something tangible, something that you can touch, you can implement measures, and you can easily address this in the next financial year to make sure that it doesn't reoccur. Just one finding, on table-based modular reactor, we just like to remember that it is a subsidiary of ESCOM and is rolled up into the ESCOM consolidated financial statements. And is placed under care and maintenance, so there are one or two findings that's unique to pebble-based modular reactor, but we need to see it in that regard, that it is in the process of care and maintenance to retain the intellectual property in that entity. We've also provided there at the bottom of the table, in the footnotes, the detail to the previous year's qualification that was raised on broadband, but for the purpose of the discussion, we're going to stick to the 11-12 financial year. When we get to the next slide that I want to bring to the committee's attention, this is the focus areas that we look at the Office of the Auditor General. Let's get the right page here. It's on page 4 of the presentation. We look at supply chain management, which is the procurement environment, which is always a hot potato in government. We look at predetermined objectives and the reporting thereon. We look at human resource matters, IT control matters, and financial health matters. And you can see from the portfolio that we've had a pretty clean run. It is almost greens all the way through, which I think is a good compliment to the Department of Public Enterprises and their oversight roles, and also to the entities themselves in terms of their audit outcomes. When we go on to underneath the table, I've provided the detail to each of these columns, to each of the focus areas where we touch on each entity's individual findings. On supply chain management, we are happy to report that no significant findings were identified during the year. When we move over to page 5 on predetermined objectives, we list two entities there, and I think this is now, with the maturing environment in terms of predetermined objectives and reporting thereon, we're finding ourselves in a situation where entities have got the processes right to plan, to collate information, to report on predetermined objectives, to make sure that the information that supports whatever is reported is verifiable and is accurate and it is complete. But we're now sitting dealing with a situation where people are being brutally honest with themselves and where targets are not achieved, it's now becoming apparent in the annual reports. And that's why we included the paragraph, and we say it's not a finding. We're just drawing the attention of the user to these paragraphs where we're saying in Alex Ford's instance that 19 out of a total 29 targets were achieved during the year. This represents 34% of the total planned targets that were not achieved during the year. On the same on broadband, we also highlight the fact that 22% of the total planned targets were not achieved during the year, and we refer the reader to those paragraphs in the annual report for those places where the predetermined objectives are reported. When we go to page 6, where we speak about pebble bed modular reactor, if we go back to the table, there was a finding on it, but this is a bit of a special finding that we are unable to report on the findings of the usefulness and reliability of the annual performance report of pebble bed modular reactor, as it was not prepared. Pebble bed modular reactor operates in terms of a care maintenance agreement. This agreement was put in place between the DPE and the PBMR to govern the transition from an operating entity to the current care and maintenance phase. And in addition, the Department of Public Enterprise granted the company exemption to submit the annual corporate plan, and hence there was no predetermined objectives for the year under review. Our audit act requires us, however, to report on predetermined objectives when we express an opinion, and that's why we included the paragraph here. On human resource matters, on the bottom of page 6, there were no significant findings to report at any of the entities. And also if we continue to information technology controls on page 7, there was also nothing to take note of. I think also, which is very important, when we get to the material errors or omissions in annual financial statements submitted for the audit, this portfolio is it's very noticeable that there weren't instances in this regard. Now this means whatever is submitted to the auditors for auditing on 31 May is not subject to material misstatements or material adjustments that is identified through the audit process. So well, the auditors were not used as a safety net to catch out the errors on behalf of the entities and the department, which is a very critical area, and this speaks also, I think, maybe about the maturity of the portfolio in terms of financial management. On the financial health status, we've included the emphasis of matter paragraphs that we had in the audit report, and I think it's just important to get the background. The emphasis of matter paragraph is a paragraph that we include to provide additional information. It's to make reference to where something was already disclosed in the annual financial statements of an entity. So it's not a finding per se. The directors of both LS4 and the NEL made certain representations of that regard. And we've included the references in the last column on where the directors made reference to the going concern issues and what they are doing in this regard. Then when we get to the other non-compliance areas that we've identified, on the financial statement side, Alex Paul did not submit their annual financial statements for auditing by the 31st of May as required by the PFMA. According to the entity, this was due to some difficulties that they experienced with the public service, with the joint venture arrangement. To get the information in the required format and the required time out of the joint venture in order for them to consolidate it into their financial statements as part of the group structure. The second finding that we had was on the top of page 10. The accounting authority did not report on the measurable objectives for the predetermined objectives as required by Treasury Regulation 29.3 for the first and second quarterly reporting of the year to the executive authority in order to facilitate effective performance monitoring and evaluation. What this finding says is the entities are required to report on a quarterly basis to the executive authority on the progress that they're making in terms of predetermined objectives. So for two quarters of the year, there were no reports submitted by Broadband InfraCo in that regard. The last part of our presentation deals with unauthorized, fruitless and wasteful, and irregular expenditure incurred by entities. And I think also a good trend that we're seeing in terms of the irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure is that there's been an overall downward trend. So it means that controls have been put in place and they've been working effectively. But I think we should never be complacent with things working. We should preferably have these things at zero. And then if we look at the irregular expenditure, we've seen also the same trend continuing where irregular expenditure has decreased in the portfolio for the two entities, Broadband and Transnet Limited. As part of our reporting, we also included in the audit report of the Department of Predetermined Objectives that the performance audit was done on the oversight and governance systems of the Department of Public Enterprises over its state-owned companies was completed. And it's a management report. The objective of the performance audit was to evaluate the economy, efficiency and effectiveness of the oversight and governance systems implemented by the department over the 9 state-owned companies in its portfolio, and the outcomes of the performance audit were included in the management report that was submitted to the department during February 2012. Thank you, Chairperson. That is the presentation from our side. Thank you, members.
Sounds too good to be true, sir.
Thank you so much, Mr. Vest.
Nothing much to write in the
I don't know if there's any comments from you.
Chair, just a few closing remarks. As mentioned before, there's been a lot of focus and a lot of hard work in these areas. Again, I must commend the department by leading by example. You know, we've had a long discussion at times on the role of the department and besides the oversight that they play, their function also going into being an example that the people can lead by, and I must commend them on making sure that they continuously year to year have ensured that their audit outcomes is clean. The other thing is I just want to touch on in order for the department to facilitate effective oversight over these entities, I think consideration needs to be given, especially in the light of the growth of the SOCs and the expectations of the role the SOCs is to play in the economy, is to look at the funding mechanisms for the department to ensure that there is a proper oversight over the SOCs. And I don't think it's just about a one-year strategy. I think it's about a medium to long-term strategy. Mm-hmm. When you look at the role that we want the SOCs to play in and this huge role of infrastructure development, etc., that we talk about energy development programs, etc., that the department has to have the reasonable capacity to actually facilitate these processes so that we don't lose sight of the governance and oversight behind the SOCs. That is something for consideration by the committee also. Chair, and then just the last part, as I stressed, in this portfolio, yes, Honourable Member, you are right, it does look quite good. But I think it's also, not just that it looks good, but I think the challenge is beyond that. The challenge actually now becomes the sustainability of it. And that is critical. For me, if I was on the committee, it would be a big concern to me as to the entities to report and say how are they going to sustain this, what are the plans to sustain this, what are the plans to ensure that they have the right skills to sustain this, not just for today but for the future. What are those growth plans that they are looking at to ensure that these don't slip? So that becomes critical. So that's on my side. I think just before I'll hand over to you is just to thank the executive, thank the management and leadership at the entities, the accounting authorities at the entities also for allowing us the space to do our work. They have auditors also, but they allow us the space to do our work. The cooperation that we do get from their external auditors to make this available to the committees and to Parliament, this information. And also the department. We have a very close working relationship with the shareholders unit of the department, which have been working closely with us to ensure that we have this oversight over these entities. And Chairperson, to yourself, your committee, we thank you and your committee for the guidance and support that they have given us. the governance structures at these entities and the governance structures within the department. We thank them also. So, all in all, I think it does not, the documents you see before you and the report that you see before you is, yes, we have compiled it, but there's a lot of people that have assisted us in compiling it, providing us with the necessary information. We thank them for that, to make this a credible report. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. Neither the CFO would like to say something. Not. thank you so much for what Honorable Nana said. A good report. I'd like to invite members to.
Obescom is not planning to spend another 30 million.
I'll start with this side. Honorable Gordon Ross, September, Mukwena, Michael, Cog, and up to Honorable Nana.
Sought to present to Parliament. I think it is useful. It's extremely friendly for ourselves to engage upon and to also block exactly the pressure points or otherwise of what it is that we need to engage on. Two or three things. The notwithstanding your accolades, I do think there are things in here that should bother us quite sufficiently, because it's not, because you see, if the department is able to achieve the trend that they have set, the question must be, why do we have some blocks still on our map? Does the, in your opinion, in what has been given to you, is there sufficient mechanism in place to be dealing with, if you take Alex Gore, Transnet, and so on various things that are being put in here? So, for example, does the internal committees function, does the audit committees function? Do they function sufficiently, in your opinion, in your engagement with you, that could take them out of their systemic, because these crosses are just going non-stop now in the blocks that you are showing us here. It's not 100% clear yet on everything. Is there sufficient capacity in the department, in your opinion, to deal with the oversight over all of them insofar as their financial accountability? We're not going to get into the services part insofar as their financial abilities is concerned, and if not, what are the major drawbacks that still get them into the situation that they are? Can somebody clarify to me this joint venture thing of Alex Gore? What does it mean for us as Parliament? What are we doing oversight on now? On the joint venture, or on Alex Gore, on the 51%, or on the... what is it here? And when you have whatever you report in here, what is it that we... Are we chasing after the joint venture, or are we chasing after something else that you have written in here? And then the other one that I'm really interested, which I'm absolutely thrilled about, that I've been given, is the predetermined objectives. Because the predetermined objectives help us to connect with past and future. And so of concern to ourselves would be, if we have a conversation with you in February next year, we would be interested to not wait for you in October next year to tell us why they haven't achieved those percentages that you are talking about here. Does that, are there any alarm bells that the portfolio committee should bother themselves with? Because this does give us an indication of the expenditure or the difficulties or otherwise. We don't want fiscal dumping in January or in February, and then you know you have a particular. So I think if you can help us a little bit with that, but for now, Chair, let me just stop there. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, I'm not going to repeat the phrases that have been accorded to you, to GP in this case. I think this is the fourth time that they have had a clean and consecutive audit. But I'm intrigued by the fact that in the case of Alex Gore, you have highlighted your concerns over the JV arrangement, that you could not pronounce clearly on that because of the dynamics around the JV. I would have loved you to similarly say something about the SAA, I know it's not opening a can of worms, a can of worms yet, because we're still going to deal with that. But I would have thought that you could have said so. The significance of my question is, we as politicians are not really, well, numerate and erudite in dealing with forensic stuff. Although we're seized with the responsibility of oversight. But what really embarrasses us is the fact that most of these things come through whistleblowing or through the media blow up, like the SAC. Now, I just wonder to what extent, and I want to latch on what Honorable September said, the internal audit, to what extent you have comments, to link up with them, because there are three levels of audit. There's the internal audit, in-house thing, then there's an external one, to objectivize audit, and then you now are the third audit. You are the equivalent of, in the court system, a constitutional court. Now, sitting where I am now, I just want to find out why is it that some of the glaring aspects of financial mismanagement will escape in your office, having all these three layers. Why do you only rely on the external audit, or do you duplicate what you actually do? Because we would have expected your office, with the capacity that it has and its profile, to be able to sense through some financial intelligence the misdemeanor, malfeasance, right, at source, and not only catch up with it when it comes up in the papers. Because it's a reflection also on us as politicians. One can quote the question of the book scandal that being dumped under the bridge, etc. In the Department of Education, of course, you see. I mean, portfolio committee have been there several times, etc. But they didn't catch up. They didn't identify this thing until the scandal actually happened. So much as we are very impressed with the audit, clean audit, but we have to make sure that your audit is thoroughgoing. And perhaps to explain myself any further, auditing beyond just the mathematical computation of numbers, but building into it the normative aspect, you see, because even audit is just a scientific thing, and which is denuded of the normative assessment, then these normative effectors actually are the ones that actually trust and they bedevil and audit, because on the surface it appears very glossy and clean, whereas underneath these normative factors that they actually ultimately will corrode the state-owned company. And then we are now assessed with the responsibility of giving the thumbs up and saying, we received the report, excellent, pass. And then lo and behold, a few weeks thereafter, there's an exposure in the media. So that's just what that aspect actually was, to see how far thoroughgoing is the audit.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, on the Alex Call Limited, on your other non-compliance, it is slightly worrying that your finding was that the accounting authority did not submit the financial statements for auditing within the 2 months after the end of the financial year, as required by Section 55(1) CI of the Public Finance Management Act. Now, in a situation like that, who do we hold accountable? Because I think that, you know, you guys go in and you do your job as thoroughly as you possibly can, and then people make it very difficult when they don't comply with very basic requirements. So who do we, as the body that does oversight over these committees, who are you telling us we should hold accountable for holding up the process and for making the process more difficult for you? And then, Chair, the South African Airways and South African Express, I think, of course, is the elephant in the room. What is the predicted, are there any predicted timelines, estimated timelines for when audits will be complete? And also, if we could have just a little bit of background as to what's going with the SA Express audit, because they had to withdraw their financials dating back quite a few years. So exactly where are we sitting with that, and if you could just give us a bit of feedback on how you intend to go forward with that. And then Chair, what, there was another thing. Just hold on for me 1 second. No, I think that's okay for now. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good report, and I think that's the way the AG's office, you know, presents to us. I think we must thank them. It's very, very clear. It's not very complicated. But also, I think our congratulations to the department. You know, the story of the SAA has triggered a lot of ideological and other debates, and I know that the last few days we have heard a lot about privatized, and yet we're seeing here in state-owned enterprises that are doing very well. And I think we, in Venezuela, they debunked that myth, that state-owned enterprises can't perform. So but that's a debate for another day. But I want to understand from the AG's office what their level of significance materiality is.
We have a second trip to Venezuela.
Okay.
It has to buy a Brazil. It has to buy a Brazil.
The issue of the level of significant materiality, and the reason why I'm asking is because I see ESCOM as a clean audit, and yet they are reporting 20 million fruitless and wasteful. You know, this word fruitless and wasteful for me, it's a fluke word. It's a swear word for me. It shouldn't be fruitless, wasteful. And now I see 20 million, previous year 27 million, and a company gets a clean audit with no matter to report. And I can tell you, if you tell Miss or Mr. Citizen that 27 million is nothing, they would frown upon you.
thank you very much. just to say, on the basis of some of the questions that were asked, especially by this one who copied on mine, when we have a clean audit, yet we worry about sustaining the status, what are we suspicious of? Because to me, it would suggest that this clean audit, even if it was in 2 years consecutively, it was a fluke. If we are worried about the capacity to sustain the clean audit, what are the pointers that suggest that it might be possible that some of these entities might not sustain the status of their balance sheets? And also, I might not have heard it, you explaining it. SAA, we know the turbulence. SA Express have not finalized their audit. What does that mean to a layman, a layperson like myself? When you have not finalized your audit, why should it be clean? But I must thank the agency, the office, for giving us this simple and straightforward kind of a feedback. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think my colleagues here have covered me in most of the questions, except to say that let me thank the presentation from the AG, and of course thank the department for the very good work, and also special thanks to this committee of public enterprise, which is very vigilant, I must say. to see to it that everything goes accordingly. You can give yourselves a round of applause. And of course, I've got just one question with regard to, you know, today I learned something from the previous committee that I'm serving on about what they call finance fiscal commission. I don't know if anybody knows about that, but from what I know is that they work with the National Treasury, and they are busy with the recommendations. Oh yeah, I see Honorable September has got that one. I just wanted to check with the AG on the recommendations that I see on this presentation. Do you work hand in glove with the FFC for your recommendations on these various departments and entities? Thank you very much, Chair.
Well, Chair, I'm interested on tomorrow's newspapers, honestly. I'm seriously interested because for all this time, SOEs are branded as failures, something that must be done away with, eating on our fiscals and so on and so on. And I mean, I was sitting here listening to the gentleman presenting. It was like, am I dreaming? Is it true? Are they missing something? Is there something that they do not know? We and the rest of the media fraternity knows. But having said that, Chair, quite frankly, pity other SOEs are not here, and I see Eskom is here. How I wish they could take a leaf from the presentation from the AG's office. Simple, straightforward, no big jargon, no attempt to hide critical information. I mean, it's stupid like myself. I failed accounting for attendance in my first attempt at university, and I'm still struggling with figures. And I know all the other annual reports that will come to us will have figures that, and I always battle with those figures. But with this one, simple, straightforward, and as a consequence, you can see we're all disarmed. There is absolutely no. We are troubled. I mean, Chris was trying very hard to find Michael. I mean, everyone is trying to find, but you know, there is absolutely nothing to cling on. Absolutely nothing. Thank you very much for the hard work, CFO. Truly, the challenge will be how to sustain this. I know the AG has also asked the same question, but can I suggest that in your endeavor to find solutions to the sustainability part, I suggest you should bring the AG along. They shouldn't only be keeping an eye on you. They must help you develop a strategy to sustain this. As I said, it's like a dream, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, that is but you're not a stupid man.
That
I think you are not a stupid.
I know I am.
No, you know. Otherwise you wouldn't understand. I think there was something wrong with your teacher.
Thank you, Chair. To the honourable members of the committee, thank you for the questions. Some of them are quite tough here, but we'll give it a bash, see how we go with them. And please understand, when I do make references, some of the questions will be part of the deliberations and discussions that you'll be having with the other stakeholders, such as the departments or the management of the entities, etc. On the issue of the vacancies, yes, it's true that there are vacancies. And it's not just about vacancies. It's about getting the right skills in. Okay, so when we say vacancies, I think we need to look beyond that. Especially in this environment that we find ourselves in. It's a very specialist in nature. the SOCs do a lot of work that require high levels of skills. So it's an area that I would say is beyond just a vacancy. It's getting the right skills in at the right time to do the right job. That needs to be the focus. And that needs to be the focus of the leadership of those SOCs in driving that process. I actually made a comment, and I'll make that comment here. I made this comment to the executive also when we had this discussion. And that is also to go beyond just the skills requirement of getting skills in, but also asking yourself, how do these skills develop the broader public sector? That is something that maybe can be a focus area for future strategies. So you look at your SOCs and you look at your transfers and you look at your ESCOMs, and you have the ability to attract some of the best talent in the country, if not in the continent. And you have to ask yourself at any point a strategic question, okay, how does this then translate to getting the broader public sector to also have that experience and benefit from it? I think that is something that we can start focusing on in discussions and deliberations. On the second question on fruitless and wasteful expenditure, I think on fruitless and wasteful expenditure, I think we have to look.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think this one was one of mathematics that because I do if it's translates one. If they do say they had, then they had, but they had the most confusing note on the in the director's statement on this. I remember the amount, it's fruitless and wasteful expenditure amount of 96 million rand. Then I add irregular expenditure, then you get to a total irregular expenditure of the 155 million rand, which I think confused both me and the auditors, because the auditors also reported on the 155 million rand irregular expenditure. But we'll just correct the presentation and send the update to that. It also shows that there's still a decrease in the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and it makes the irregular expenditure less.
Thanks, Carl. But here again, that clarification, I think, is in the annual report. It will be part of the annual report reporting. The other question on the yellow blocks, are there processes in place to address these as the department and the entity? Yes, my belief is it is. But again, this is one of those questions that you'll want to get direct to those entities. You'll want to get the entities not only to give you the assurance that they're going to have processes in place to address them, but going to the extent that in their quarterly reporting to you, they should be showing you the progress towards it. That's my understanding of all sides. It is where it's just not, you tell me you're doing it, but show me you're doing it. Okay. And that becomes critical. I think part of this is also that as the oversight, you need to ask yourself the question, the information that I get presented to me, is it credible? Yeah. So the reporting that I get on a quarterly basis, how do I know that this information is credible? How do I know the quality of this information is beyond reproach? And this is where we're saying you look at your governance structures, like your internal audit, etc., and ask yourself the question, what are they doing to make sure that you get credible information? On the predetermined objectives, the percentage achievement?
Thank you, Chairman. With the joint venture, I think the question is correctly, what are we looking at here? And I think that's also something that the entity has grappled with. Because the public sector joint venture is something that is derived from a court ruling, it doesn't have a legal entity or a legal status as a company, as a department, as a public entity. And therefore, it's not necessarily bound by the PFMA and those regulations. I'm an auditor, so the quickest and cleanest way of probably doing something about it is corporatizing it in some way, shape, or form, so that it then falls within the ambit of the PFMA, and you can then apply the principles of the ambit of the PFMA. The challenge comes in is because most of the functional operation at this stage lies in the joint venture and not within the entity. I think the majority, with the exception of three employees of AlexCorp, has been seconded to this joint venture that does the physical operations, but only 51% of that gets accounted in AlexCorp's book. So it's a very difficult situation in terms of, I think, for AlexCorp in terms of their oversight in the accounting authority.
Then going on to the predetermined objectives, and the percentage achievement, I think again you'll have to look towards the entities. Okay. So if they have reported that they've achieved 67% of their predetermined objectives, I think the 33% that's not achieved, the entity must report to you and give you explanations and reasons, etc., etc., as to why they've not achieved it. And again, I would expect that to be a quarterly reporting item to the committee to say, okay, we were 33% shy last year, this is how we're going to catch up. And then every quarter starts reporting on that. I think it can be a focus area for the committee to ensure that they get that reporting stability from the entities. Again, it highlights from us to yourselves the areas of focus. Remember, we are reporting. So it's an area of focus for you when you engage with the entity. On the issue of SAA and SACS, I'm going to deal with the questions around that in one response. And that is, I will report on it as soon as I've got the information to report on it. Okay. I am awaiting the auditors of SAA, and as you're aware, we are now doing the audit of SACS. Once I have concluded on those audits, and I'll report the audit outcomes. And I think that's appropriate. I think if there's any other questions beyond that, you might be able to get from the entity or the department themselves. The non-submission of AFS and the issue around the non-submission of AFS and who do we hold accountable is the accounting authority. Okay, in terms of the PFMA, in terms of the legislative requirements, the accounting authority has a responsibility to submit financial statements timely. And I would go one step further to say it's actually also the quality of those financial statements. They've also got a responsibility towards the quality of the financial statements. So if you want to get responses around that, the accounting authority, which is the board of directors, will have to explain why there was a delay in the submission of the financial statements. There is also, in the annual reports that will be tabled, you will generally get an explanation as to why they have submitted late financial statements. You can obviously pursue that further with the entity's board. Significant materiality. Chair, yes. Every entity has a materiality figure. It's dependent on the entity itself. It's not an overall materiality for government. It depends on various factors through the auditing standards that we will determine the materiality for that entity. Of interest, fruitless and wasteful irregular does not have a materiality. So I want to just lie to you about that. It does not have a materiality because there's a legislative requirement. So they have to report on any amount that is irregular or fruitless and wasteful. But as such, what happens here is, as long as they disclose that information and it's disclosed correctly in the financial statements, we will highlight it. Because then it is there as public knowledge as to what that fruitless and wasteful expenditure or irregular expenditure is. It would not necessarily affect the opinion on the audit report. That's as per the reporting guidelines.
Okay. Also, through you, Chairperson, we have included the references where it is disclosed in the annual reports of the entities in the tables on irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure.
As such, that reference again forms a basis for further deliberations between the committee and the entity. The nature of that is also disclosed in the annual report, but obviously if there's further information that the committee requires, then we'll pursue that further. The sustainability of audits, it's actually an interesting question. What do we mean by sustainability? But it's one way we're saying, it's not about a concern that we have that the entity might not be able to pull this off, or it was a fluke in the last 2 years or 4 years or 8 years. But it's about sustaining the internal control environment that produces a set of financial statements that is materially correct. And the reason behind this is a set of financial statements is not produced just by sitting one evening and saying, let me put some figures together for financial reporting. It actually comes from you having proper record keeping. You have proper systems in place throughout the whole year to facilitate the information flow. And that talks back to your internal control environment being strong enough. And hence, you would you would take cognizance of the fact that when we talk about this, we talk about not just clean audit, but clean administration. So that you have a system in place, that you have clean administration that facilitates effective and efficient reporting. So the report is just a culmination and end result of your activities. So it's not about getting a clean audit. It's about making sure that you have clean administration that facilitates the process of getting to clean audits or quality financial statements. That's the first thing that we encourage, is the sustainability of that control environment, because it's easy to slip, because of the ever-changing environment we find ourselves in. The other thing is the skills that you do have as an entity, the skills that you do have as a department. You need to look at those key skills and how do we retain those skills, because at the end of the day, it's people behind your processes, it's people that drive those processes. So you have to make sure that we have the right skills, we retain those skills, and we have plans for further development of skills also. Okay. So when we talk about the sustainability, we're talking about those classifications, those categories. Non-penalization of audits, again, it's an area that I will not comment on. Purely because the reasons for those non-finalizations of those audits is tabled by the shareholder through the parliamentary processes when there's a delay in the audit or the tabling of an audit, and that documents are normally available to Parliament. Or it can be obtained from the relevant department and entities. Finance Fiscal Commission and the hand in glove with them on the recommendations. What we normally do is our recommendations, the findings, the recommendations, and the root causes forms a broader part of our reporting in terms of the general report. Now, you all have been privy to this document or have seen this document. So this document is not just shared with the committees and Parliament, etc., but all users. So you would have Treasury, who will also be aware. We also roll it out to Public Service Commission, who uses it for their purposes. I work very closely with them to facilitate that. Also, DPSA uses it. So there's a lot of different users. So the Finance Fiscal Commission will be one of the users, and they will take what they need from that report. Because everything that's contained in our audit reports and everything that I presented today to you will form part of the larger general report at a point in time. So that information that becomes public is also utilizable, but we facilitate that process with the broader government to ensure that there's this flow of information and cooperation between us and other Chapter 9 and also any other entity that requires this information. Because you don't want to duplicate information, you don't want to duplicate efforts. If we've done the exercise, you know it's credible, so we share that information. Chair, I hope I've managed to address the concerns raised to some satisfaction, and thank you. Back to you.
Thank you for the response. Very briefly, I find it extremely good that you indicate to the committee the performance on predetermined objectives. I think that helps us to go into a meeting with a state-owned company to say, but explain. 34% not achieved and 22% not achieved. My question is, four entities are no matter to report. Just explain to me. I'm missing something. It's the Nel, Eskom, Safcol, and Transnet.
Thank you again. Thank you for that answer, but I think my one question might not have been answered sufficiently, and that is notwithstanding the fact that you say yes, you know, can explore it further with the entity, but what I have asked specifically is, in your engagement, one of the things that I would imagine you would overlook is the functioning of internal controls, audit committees, and so on. And I'm saying where they are blocked, can you report to us whether there's, functioning of it, because you can't have a recurrence of certain things in this report. And then the other one, Chair, I wonder if I can suggest that on the South African Express, I think we need a bit of maybe some legal assistance here insofar as our oversight function is concerned, because South African Express has not reported to us since whenever.
Thank you. My first part relates to SA Express and SAA. I just want to clarify a few things. If I heard them very well, SAA has not submitted. Did I hear correctly that SA Express has submitted, they are working on it? If that is correct, is it for the both financial years? I just want just to understand that. But the last one, Chairperson, I think their response sort of supports my view. When I talk about significance materiality, to say when it comes to fruitless and wasteful, there is nothing like it's too little. It must be mentioned. And I'm glad for that clarification. Now, what I'm trying to check, if and we are agreed now that fruitless, wasteful, has no materiality, why do I still get a clean audit with that? That's my question. If it were something else, you would have said, no, it's not material. So it's not emphasis of met. Now here it is, 27 million, and we say there is nothing like it's too little with this category. But it's not part of the emphasis of met. This is what I'm trying to understand.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think to answer the first question, it is one of the most difficult documents to prepare when you've got nothing to report on. So the no matters to report on a predetermined objectives means that for the objectives that was selected and tested in those entities, there were no findings identified. Also, the number of targets that were achieved was not above the ratio that we consider reportable in terms of our audit report. So that is what the no matters to report on means in this context.
Then on the next one, on the function of the internal audit and audit committees, we do work on it. We look at the effectiveness in our audit, on the work that the audit committee does and the internal audit. Had there been issues to report on, we would have reported on it. However, we are encouraging the role of internal audit and the audit committee to be heightened. Okay, so the governance structures, and I would encourage the chairs of the audit committees for the entities and the department actually to come and on a quarterly basis and brief you as a committee as to the progress and the risks that they face. We've also encouraged this with the ministry, with the executive authority on the same basis. So the function of internal audit and the function of the audit committee is part of our audit scope. We do evaluate it, and had there been issues, we would have reported upon it. With South African Express and SAA, okay, I am reporting on the 11-12 financial year. For the 11-12 financial year, these audits have not been concluded. Putting it simply, these audits have not been concluded as at this date for the 11-12 financial year. Once these audits have been concluded and I have been produced or given the information, I will then report on. Okay. Thank you, Chair.
That's about it from members.
I'm not answered, Chairperson. That's why I want to understand. The AG's office says fruitless and wasteful has no significance materiality. Now I want to understand, if that is the case then, why is an entity with that not having emphasis of matter and therefore getting a clean audit?
Okay, Chair. With fruitless and wasteful expenditure, the PFMA and the Treasury regulations has provisions where fruitless and wasteful expenditure that is incurred has to be, certain processes have to be followed by the entity when such expenditure is incurred. So there has to be an investigation by the entity. The entity has to check whether they can hold somebody accountable for their expenditure, etc. At the end of the financial year, had all those processes taken place, the entity will then report on the expenditure, the reasons why the expenditure is there, and what they have done in terms of that expenditure. As long as that disclosure, now that's a requirement, that's the legal requirement. As long as that requirement is met, and that is disclosed in the annual report, which then becomes a public document, we will at times emphasize on it if it is significant, not in our report, but as long as it's disclosed in the annual report, then there isn't an issue. Had that not been disclosed in the annual report, then there will be an issue of non-compliance. But because the regulations and the requirements of the Act have been met in terms of the reporting requirements of the irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, then there is a compliance with the regulations. So it does not become a reportable item. I hope I've managed to answer your question. Honorable.
I think the point that the honorable members actually wants clarity on is a matter that needs to be addressed with the, that needs to be raised with the entity itself, and what to not do with yourself. Why and what and all those things. I think that's what Honorable Dukova wants. But that's a matter that the entity has to answer to. I think this brings us to the end. Let me thank you again for this report, and I think some members of the committee have expressed their happiness with, as far as the department is concerned, and so the, and it, I think what we can say really is that there's a lot of improvement, especially from amongst our entities, and that needs to be, you know, commended. And we normally say when we engage with our entities that, you know, we are all together in this, and I think as to the sustainability and improvement on those who are still lagging behind, it's also, you know, our responsibility as a committee to make sure that we increase our level of vigilance in doing our work. We have raised the matter of funding for the department to do its work, oversight work, that we have raised in Parliament. And I think it's a matter that we will continuously raise until, you know, we're satisfied that the department is in a very good position to do its work. Because it's not, if you look at the work that the department has to do, and the money that it gets, it's a bit skewed. And we also believe that it needs to be resourced to do its work. I think I've said what I want to say. That is it. The CFO, I hope you. In fact, we'll raise it with the department. We don't want to send you to the department to raise what we feel about it.
First of all, through the chair, I would like to thank the committee for their support and for the encouragement for us to carry on as we have done. That is of prime importance to us, and we will do that. Second of all, in terms of capacity, I'm happy to report that the Treasury has agreed to fund us. We've identified a lot of posts, and they have actually given us funding for 12 critical posts, which is not all of them, but we do, we have won some of us, and I'm not sure if you've seen the papers recently, but we've had a pretty aggressive recruitment drive. We're trying to attract the right type of skills and things like that in order to capacitate ourselves and to retain those skills. We've had an enormous attrition of people leaving, and the entities actually, the SOCs are some of the biggest culprits of taking people from the nursery school into there, because they've been built into it is a challenge, but one cannot stand in the way of these people. But just to report to the committee that is, we have had some success in that regard.
The end of our meeting on this matter. You are free if you would like to leave the meeting. We have two other items, and that's a briefing by the researcher on the adoption of the minutes. Eric, we are here. Maria, you're welcome.
Thank you, sir.
We got your apology that you'll be arriving late.
Thanks, Shepard. The pre-report, as we drafted it together with the secretary, we're supposed to get some of the information from Treasury. We're supposed to receive some of the information from Treasury, from COPA, as well as from the department, but the challenge has always been that it's very difficult to source some of this information because, for an example, Treasury will say they are not yet ready, they've got time frames to release the expenditure of the department at a particular time. So the information that we managed to get was from the department, although it came also in trips and drafts. So what I'm saying is that the report is based actually on that information that we have received, which is limited in nature. If I may get into the content of the report, I won't detain members on the introduction, but I will go into highlights where there are important issues, because some of the presentation that has been made here by the auditor's office, they did touch to some of the issues with respect to the Department of Public Enterprises. So if I may go to the analysis of the expenditure trends on the report itself, Public Enterprises, this information, we got it from the Auditor General for the five-year review. They started from 2006 up until 2011. It indicates from 2006 to 2007 financially that is about 228,000 of your regular expenditure up until 2011. It was 26 million. And then fruitless and wasteful expenditure is 80,000. That was in 2006. And then if you look at the next page, you'll notice that it's only 2011, where then we had the fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 4,000 on the department. And then if you go to the first quarter expenditure of the department,
The information we received was from the 1st of April up until the end of June. In that period, the department has spent something like 26.2 million, which is 2.91% of the overall budget the department received this year, which is in total 1.2 billion. Most of the expenditure went to the administration program, which is the compensation of employees. And then legal governance, the expenditure there was at 3.9 million. And then the portfolio management and strategic partnership was 9.7 million. If you look on the right-hand side, then these are the percentages in terms of how much has been spent in terms of the overall budget. If I go into just to highlight some of the important issues, the department budget increased from the last financial year, which was 363.3 million, into 1.2 billion. But the bulk of the increase came as a result of transfers to both Denel and Alesco. Denel is earmarked to receive 700 million, and Alesco is 350 million. With Alesco, it's actually the deed of settlement. It's a court order that the department has to honor each year, because after the claim by the Rikersville community was made, then the court ordered that they need to rehabilitate the land, they need to provide funding for the chief, the joint pooling venture that the Auditor General referred to. So most of that money goes to Alesco to fulfill those obligations from the court order out of the claim by the Rikersville community. With Denel, we know the challenges with the aerostructures division. So some of the money will go to that, not necessarily to the division, but also to strengthen the balance sheet of the entity. And then out of this amount, the department therefore spent 36.2 billion, but the transfers were not made. Thanks, sir. The transfers were not made in the first quarter of the expenditure. That is from 1st April up until the end of June. And then we have 2.11, we have the second quarter expenditure, which will then run from July to end of September. This is the information that we received. We received it very late, but what it indicates is that about the department has spent about more than, this is my calculation, I think it would be more than 70 million, because it's 3.9 in overall, 3.9 of the overall budget. Most of the money, as I indicated in the first quarter, it went to compensation of employees, which is about 46.6 million. And then goods and services, something like 35.8 million. Goods and services could include even consultants in there, 35.8 million. And then go to transfer payments, they're not necessarily speaking to transfers for Denel and Alesco, but you will notice there that there's a certain amount of money also that has been in the budget for transfers, something like 74.2 million. But then also toward the end of the second quarter expenditure, it looks like the transfers to Denel and Alesco have not yet been made. And then if we look at capital expenditure, and the expenditure under this item is 1.2 million of the total budget, but it speaks to the program rather than to the overall budget of the department, that 55%. In total, the department in the first two quarters therefore has spent about 6.07%, which could be something like 70 something million out of the 1.2 billion that it received. But you also understand that out of that 1.2 billion, there is 1.50 million which is earmarked for transfers, and then the department will only be left with less than 200 million to do its
to fulfill it are oversight minded over SOEs. I don't know if the members will be interested on the program structure, other than to see that out of the five programs that the department used to function with, they shrunk them into only three, which is the administration, legal governance, and the last one. And the last one is the portfolio management and strategic partnership. This last one compromises most of the other programs that the department used to function with previously. That's where you'll find manufacturing, that's where you find transport enterprises, energy and broadband enterprises. But the expenditure trends are that if you look at, for an example, at administration, which looks at the office of the deputy minister, the minister, the general staff in general, the overall budget for this program was 104.4 million for this financial year. It has already it's indicated in the table that I referred to earlier that about 23 point something million has been already spent on that program. And then if we look at legal governance has been expected to, the legal governance is expected to make use of 26.9 million. This is this is the program that also takes our responsibility of the issues that are affecting Alesco, because the out-of-court settlement between Alesco and the claimants is handled by this program. So this is where Alesco issues will fall under. And the program to date has spent, no, these are the expenditure trends. It has received, it has been allocated 26.9 million. And then the expenditure trends that this will increase from this amount in the next medium term expenditure to 32.9 million. At an annual average rate of 11.6%, and the explanation is that this increase will be driven by a centralization of legal services from the sector units, which means all legal issues that the department deals with will now move to this program. And then the third one, portfolio management and strategic partnership, this one is, I think is a huge program in the department, because it's comprised of energy, broadband, manufacturing, transport, which transport we can talk about, let's say, Transnet, manufacturing, Danel. You're talking about energy and broadband, Eskom, and as well as Infraco. Then also the economic impact and policy alignment and strategic partnership, which also takes into consideration oversight responsibilities of the department. This program has been, when we look at the expenditure trends, the program is expected to decrease to 7.3 million at an average rate of 31.4%. Looking at the department in general and what it has been doing in terms of its mandate, I'll refer here in the section 4, which refers to titled as key policy developments and legislative changes. The department on its own has not developed any legislation, but then there were legislation that came from other departments that had an impact on its operations. One of which is the Integrated Coastal Management Bill by the Department of Environmental Affairs, the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Amendment Bill by the Department of Trade and Industry, the Special Planning and Land Use Management Bill by the Department of Land and Rural Development, and then the Industrial Development Zone Bill by the Department of Trade and Industry. The Preferential Procurement Regulation issued by the Minister of Finance, as well as the Independent Systems and Market Operator Bill by the Department of Energy. The department has made its comment and submit a mission on all of the legislation proposals
but no legislation from the department itself. In some cases, some of the issues that it had raised, they have been taken note of, one of which is the integrated coastal management bill. So far, that's what the department has been in terms of legislation. From my own opinion, I was expecting that the department might come up with the legislation on shareholder management model, because it's something that has been on the offing, or something they've been talking about for the past 3 years or so. So I would have expected that they, something that they need. But then, of course, because of the PRC, I think they are awaiting the outcome of the PRC maybe to make suggestion in that direction. If we're looking at our report on performance targets, we'll note that the department, unlike other departments, it's not necessarily a service-oriented department, but what it does is to oversee all the SOEs. Some of the key performance indicators in terms of overseeing are those SOEs. You look at the shareholder compact with SOEs that are signed in time, the adoption of SOEs corporate plans, consideration of quarterly reports by the SOEs. This includes also monitoring the infrastructure rollout plan implemented by both Eskom and Transnet, as well as the date of settlement by Alesco with regard to the Richtersveld community. Other than that, the department will sign the minister will sign with the president what I would call performance agreements, which means the minister signs with the president. But the challenge with that, from my view, is that when the minister signs these performance agreements with the president, the committee does not have the privilege to know what is contained in there, even with the shareholder compact, where the SOEs signs their key performance indicators with the department. The committee does not know all these things. That is why when the Auditor General was, the Office of the Auditor was referring to predetermined objectives, we find that before they never said these are our objectives for the year. And then when they come for the annual report, then they talk about predetermined objectives. And on the recommendation down, they also brought that up because the one thing that Parliament will talk about, for an example, during the State of the Nation, will be skills development, job creation. But even those skills development, even those job creation targets are not contained in the shareholder compact, where then you will see that an SOE has failed to meet the targets. They are not. So to me, if the job creation targets or skills development were targets that were also contained in the shareholder compact, then it will mean that the SOE are very serious about these commitments. But they are not there. I think this is a challenge or something that the committee might need to address. So looking at some of the targets that the department has signed with the minister signed with the president, you will notice that it's to improve the delivery and maintenance of infrastructure and monitoring the rollout of the Transnet and SCOM bill program. You will know that SCOM one of their key performance was to keep the lights on. That was in their shareholder combat. But if you talk about job creation, talk about skills development, those things are not there. So just to go down on the key objectives, to achieve police and regulatory clarity in sectors in which the state-owned companies operate, these are the targets for the department over SOEs. To improve the operational efficiencies of state-owned companies, particularly in relation to the reliable delivery of rail, port services, and reliable generation, distribution, and transmission of electricity. To develop operational indicators for each of the required sub-outputs identified as part of delivery agreement. I will go and point by point in terms of what is the performance, because 5.1, actually this is the performance of the department. 5.2, these are performance up until 5.7. This is what the department has done in relation to those targets that have been set there. If I may go to Section 6, which talks about program
performance and under point one, which is successive. This section refers to the outcomes announced by the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. The Department of Performance and Evaluation and its assessment of the Department of Public Enterprises came with the following indicators in terms of performance. That Transnet has invested over 18.4 billion in infrastructure replacement and capacity expansion, bringing this to a total of 71.8 billion in the past 5 years. Major achievements in rail environment. The rail environment includes completion of 536 of the 800 jumbo wagons built for the coal line operation. In ports, Transnet terminals achieved improvements in crane productivity. The depth and container terminal achieved an average of 30 cranes moves per hour, which is expected to continue throughout 2012. And then the department took the lead in developing a funding model for ESCOM field program to ensure security of supply. Cabinet noted the hybrid funding solution comprising of the 20 billion equity injection to ESCOM and 174 billion additional guarantees, bringing the total guarantee framework to 350. The department also performed all its shareholder functions, including the evaluation of state-owned companies, corporate plans, development of shareholder combat, including shareholder strategic intent statements, quarterly and annual reporting, as well as approval of significant and material transactions. All of this speaks to what I just referred earlier, that you see the targets, but if you talk about skills, job creation, it doesn't seem as if these are things that are important maybe for SOEs, although, of course, the SOEs will commit at the beginning of each year. And then if you look at challenges, the department's overall objectives are to provide an effective shareholder management system and to support and promote economic efficiency within each of state-owned companies. If we look at the challenges, first to begin with Alesco, one of Alesco's challenges has been the implementation of the deed of settlement, especially the issue that Alesco needs to preserve the resources and attendant benefits on behalf of the Rutherford community, which meant then that some of the activities or operation of Alesco had to be put on hold up until the joint pooling and sharing venture was in operation. So I think now that the JPVC has been established, then Alesco will begin to operate normally, and then it will be able to see how much it's making. Because the quantity, it was until this is resolved, because there were community problems competing for leadership position in the community, then the council said you cannot continue to mine when this is under dispute. But now that it has been established, then I think Alesco will be able to operate optimally. With Daniel, the challenge has been Daniel Aerostructures. We know that the French company Saab had to pull out, and then I think that left a big hole on Daniel. And we know also the management of Daniel has been trying to look for an equity partner. Up to date, nothing has been coming, but I think that the department also is working toward making sure that Daniel becomes profitable, but that is the challenge. The 700 million from the department's budget is trying to address some of those challenges. And then with the SAFCOL, the challenge with SAFCOL is that almost 60% of their plantations are under being claimed by the communities, and this is actually is a hindrance on the part of SAFCOL. But not only that, but the future of SAFCOL has not yet been decided whether to exit the forest industry or to continue to make investments. And the committee has raised this issue on a number of occasions. I think in this financial year, maybe before the end of this financial year, clarity will come from SAFCOL status on whether to exit or to make more investments. With broadband in Fraco, one of the challenges was that the entity, for the first time since 2007, when it was established,
it receives a qualified audit opinion, and then because of that, there were also issues of fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 1.9 million and irregular expenditure of 151.1 million. So those are the issues. I think the auditor's office did refer to some of the challenges with regard to compliance with wasteful expenditure. South African Express, the biggest challenge was the financial statements for the 2010-2011 financial year, which were withdrawn from Parliament. And up to date, they have not yet been retabled. And even for this financial year, this seems to be a challenge. So that one, I think our members might are aware with. And then we've got South African Airways. South African Airways, the issue with South African Airways, the balance sheet has been very weak for some time. I think to date it just exploded, and then it became imperative from the senior management that really they had to go to Treasury, because if you note that the Airbus deal, now they have to start to make payments, I think in 2013 or toward the end of this year. So that, I think, is what the pressing issue. If they don't have that money, then they need to get it somewhere. So the 6 billion that they received from Treasury, I think it will not only address the balance sheet issue, but the payments they need to make to the Airbus deal, because they like they were saying, they need aircraft that are fuel efficient, because fuel is costing them a lot. So that is the challenge currently with South African Airways. And then interventions required. It's very difficult to come up with intervention, because there is the PRC report that the public is still awaiting for. People are not yet, people, they don't know what will happen to the SOEs, what role they are expected to play, what recommendation will come from the PRC. But then I think it would be important also for the department to have the required, the expected skilled people, as the auditor's office did mention, that you need people with the kind of skills that is needed to oversee the SOEs, because if you look at the department staff, they are less than 200, and they need to oversee SOEs that are to invest something like 300 billion, 500 billion. So you really need, and these are different sectors. It's energy, it's broadband, it's transport, it's aviation. So you really need people with their relevant skills to do that job. And the DG did mention that on a number of occasions that they are really needed. And I think that the committee will behave, because she did mention that out of the 24 posts that were vacant, the Treasury has managed to give them money to appoint 12 people. So if I may go to section 0.8, because I think what I've just said covers most what the intervention is required. Where lies with entities? The department does liaise with entities, because you've got these forums, the chief executive officers forum, the chief financial officers forum, at annual general meetings, and then the department will engage with them in the process of signing shareholder compacts. I think when you look at these forums, then the question should be, are they doing what they're supposed to do? Because even though there are these forums, sometimes you find that there are still challenges within and among the SOEs. So the question will be, are they functional? Is there anything that comes out of these forums where they can share the experiences, what challenges that they have, and what the DP can help or intervene in a sense? And then if I may go to section 10, which will be the conclusions and recommendations. The report takes note of the fact that the department was allocated 1.2 billion, based on the department's projection for the medium-term expenditure framework period, the department will receive less
of the money that it received now. But we know that the department's budget, usually if it's big, it's about transfers. It doesn't necessarily mean that the money will go to the departments. Always money that it will take out and give it to SOEs. But then the projections, this has been said, I think, for the past 3 years. When the then minister, Trevor Manuel, was there, he said there won't be no more funding for SOEs. There will be no more funding, the same thing said by the current Minister of Finance. But when challenges come, then I think Treasury is forced one way or the other to come and try and help. So, conclusion, I think this report, what it's trying to say, especially on the issue of, on the part of the department, is that there is a need for a legislation for the department to be empowered to be able to tell the SOEs what to do, not necessarily the day-to-day or to micromanage them, but in cases where the department finds that they're deviating from national objectives. Because as it is, I think the DG once said this, that the SOEs, because they believe that they know what they're doing, when the DPE wants to do something, they know that you are a shareholder, you cannot micromanage us. Your mandate is to oversee us. So I think there are limits into what the how the department can intervene in that sense. But if there is a legislation that empowers the department, I think that would be a correct way of sorting some of the challenges within the SOEs. Because if you look at, this is an example, the Department of Transport, they drafted the master plan, the transport master plan. And they said this is what they would like for the country, the speed rail train. But then Transnet said, no, we're not ready. So you can see that if there is no legislation, it will be difficult to say to the SOEs, you're deviating from the national government plans. We need to do things the way government expects them. So those are the challenges. I think the legislation is very important. And then also I mentioned earlier about the department's budget to be able to meet its staff complement requirements for specialized skilled people so that they can oversee what the SOEs are doing. Also a reference to the Presidential Review Committee on state-owned companies. I think this time around everyone expected to be out, so that people can engage with the findings and the recommendations, and also the issue is to know where they stand, instead of this speculation that this one will go to another department and so forth. The last point is, this one I did also highlighted earlier, that it will be also to the advantage of Parliament to have access to the shareholder compact, because for me, it puts Parliament in an awkward position when the annual reports are presented at the end of the year, and then the department talks about predetermined objectives. When Parliament had no idea what were these, whether they were soft targets, or when were they signed, and it's very difficult really, because I think if Parliament were to know earlier, could use the Parliament to suggest and say, why don't you include job creation in this compact or skills development, so that you can also be measured in terms of your performance. So the shoulder compact is an issue I think that Parliament will need to address. And that brings this presentation to the end. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks for the good report. Quite clear, straightforward, especially recommendations and proposals. Can I ask your I'm working on two reports, because the one we received, can I continue? The one I received and the one we're working is two different ones, so I'm not, just be with me. On your table, public enterprises first quarter expenditure. The total budget expenditure is 2.91%. It gives a skew picture. Because I'm asking a clarity. The total budget of the departments is 1.2 billion. The two transfers of Benel and Elexco is 1.05. If you deduct the two amounts, it's 199 million. As you said, it's 200 million. Just less than 200 million. Wouldn't it better be to do the first quarter expenditure based on the 199 million? Because if somebody reads this document, it says after the first quarter, less than 3% spent. Then it says, hey, what's happening here? These guys are not working. They're not spending. So I'm asking whether it'll be possible to base the table on actual expenditure on the 199 million. Actual expenditure and the percentage of the budget spent. I think it'll be much better to interpret and to see the tendencies. This 1.05 million makes it askew, because the one is 700, that's not through the books, as you say, and the other one is 350 million, that is not appearing in this first quarter. So the whole picture is askew. So I'm asking whether we can adjust that. Number two, on your page 9, you talk about challenges. Just a small issue. It's program performance, paragraph 6. The first one, 6.1, is successes. 6.2 is challenges. But I think the following 6.1, the numbering is incorrect, because all those are challenges under the paragraph challenges, if I understand you correctly. So it must be 6.2 is challenges, 6.1.1 is Alex Core, 6.1.2 is Danel, and so forth. My last point. Do you think we can do in this report, I don't know what you call it, Chairperson, but sometimes you have a window period, you report on this, but sometimes there's a post-event happening that you can say, outside this period that we're reporting, something happened here, and you just make a footnote of it. For instance, the 5 billion guarantee given by Treasury to SAA doesn't appear in the reporting period, but it has a bearing on what we say here. So either in a footnote or a post-event happening to say, outside this reporting period, Treasury guaranteed the 5 billion to SAA. I'm asking whether it's possible. Similar, when we talk about the capacity restrictions of the DPE, they ask for 24 posts. Post the event, Treasury approved 12 positions. And I think it would be better if we can say post the event, or since this report, Treasury approved 12 critical posts. Otherwise, we get lost, and the reader doesn't get a global picture of what we're doing. I think the most important for us is to concentrate on paragraph 10, the conclusions and the recommendations, because that carries us forward. And there again, I think your recommendations is sound. Your paragraph 1, I'm battling with this one. There is a great need for legislation that will empower the department to carry out its oversight responsibilities. But two paragraphs further, we say we wait the PRC report. I don't know what the PRC will recommend. And here we call for legislation to the department to carry out these errors. How can we make it separate from the PRC report? And we don't know what the PRC report will tell. So I have a battle to see where does this call for legislation come from. And how do we function it into this report to make sense? Because this report's outstanding. And then the staff complements requirement, again my point, we call for 24, since then 12 has been filled. So I think it makes, it will make better reading. And then the shareholder compacts, you make three recommendations, four recommendations. And I think the shareholder compacts, we've been calling for this for a long time in this committee. And I can't remember whether we were told it's confidential or it's between the minister and the entity, and whether there's a block for us not to see it. Can you just explain to us and refresh our memories whether we have access to it? But we've called for it, but we never received it. So again, let us just make sure we call for something that they will say, yeah, you're right. Here are eight copies of the shareholder complex. For the time being, I think I'll stop there.
I want to agree, that was my first point as well, about the first quarter expenditure, because by and large, although it doesn't work out like that, you expect to see about a 25% spent, so it makes it very much an underspend, which begins to ring alarm bells. I think I just want to make a comment on a couple of things, and the one thing is the legislation that affects them. Now, a couple of these bills we've had a bit of input into, and then that's all. But it's quite, I think if we've got so many bills that I want to give them five here that affect our department, and yet we've had so little to do with any of them. And I think that can be problematic if it affects us. I don't know. It's just a comment I'm making. And the other comment is around the PLC. I just find it extremely difficult, and I don't know how we can go forward on this. I've brought this up before. We're going ahead without it, and I mean, this should have been before us a year ago. And yet, you've got to go ahead and make plans. And I think that's part of, why we're so flapping around sometimes, because the planning doesn't go ahead properly, and then, we come and we fill in that plan. We sort of go ahead, the cart before the horse, or whatever you call it. I don't know if we can pick up somehow in our recommendations a bit stronger than we just wait for. I know it's
a bit out of our hands, but it's just a comment I'm making. Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. Let me thank our researcher here for the report. I just wanted to check something, Chair, with regard to what I spoke about earlier on, what I asked the AG about this fiscal commission. Today, as I was saying, they were attending another portfolio committee where they were assisting the portfolio on the recommendations of the BRRR, and apparently they are going to be circulating all committees in Parliament. They've just started this financial year to do so. They've been in existence since 2000. When was it? No. I want to withdraw. It's the water problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. There's something that actually concerns me as a member of parliament. You know, the fact that Treasury can use its discretion and just to take such a bold move of issuing a guarantee of $5 billion over the heads of over the heads of the portfolio committee, because it doesn't make much sense of the BRRR exercise. A lot of committees engaged in BRRR exercise, make recommendations, etc., and in most cases, Treasury just says, decline, there's no money. But then, when it suits them, or when circumstances are so daunting, then they get shocked and they just, over the head of Parliament, just bail out an SOE. Now, that embarrasses the portfolio committee that is overseeing the particular thing, you see. Because that's part one. Part two is the fact that, and I know I'm not discussing SOE, you still are going to do that. You know, at the end of one portfolio committee meeting, almost like in a church when the benediction is about to be pronounced, that the issue of $6 billion just came up. That's what I just did. And the then chairperson and CEO were strenuously denying, no, we don't need $6 billion. Where does this story come from? We don't need this $6 billion. It's all nonsense, man. What not? You remember that? We're in S36. They actually denied, S36. They actually denied. Yes, they said, no, it's all nonsense. It's just all media hype and whatnot and all that. Well, in fact, it was actually true. So they didn't take us into their confidence, and it makes fools of us as people of excessive oversight. And that really means, Mr. Richard said, that we and all of us, we must just be very careful now not to play the role of sweethearts to these SOCs and then begin to cover them and to become protective. Because, in fact, we actually look like fools now. They've actually made us look like absolute fools. Because we're almost believing that they didn't need $6 billion. No, they don't need $6 billion. Where did they get the $6 billion? Just the media hype, the media and enemy, etc. When in fact it was true. Because the moment they resigned, there was a need for this $5 billion. It's a staggering amount of money. You try, Chairperson, to recommend as a portfolio committee that an OCC must be given $2 million. It will be. The chairman that are very high to me, they rejected. So they're saying we've got no money. But out of the blue, they just, over the head of the patrol committee, you know, send a bill out. Now, that means that I'm linking this point with this one that you've just made, Mr. Boscati, that the portfolio committee needs to be apprised of this performance agreement between the minister and the president. Some of those things you should be aware of. Otherwise, how do we evaluate the performance of the minister? We know, of course, the separation of powers. But I'm really worried now that just out of the blue, Treasury, and we are supposed to defend that in our constituencies. When in fact, it's actually worse because this one has resides in our own domain as part of enterprises. And we feel completely disappointed. Well, we applaud and admire with a bit of a grimace, you know. Yeah, I like it, but we wish we were taken on board type thing, you know, type of a thing.
No, not on this. Because I mean, this is not even going to go into the report. We should find out time to venture into the veracity of all of this. I want to, if we go back to this report again, I'm going to raise what I raised before. Thank you, Eric Boskati, for this. He correctly, in his introduction, sketches out for us what the purpose of this exercise is. So I think, Chair, that's an important section to deal with that, what the purpose of this exercise is. Now, ourselves as the legislatures has to rise to the occasion that we have been given here again to respond to this call that are being made to us, which we fought for very hard, which arises out of the Constitution that says that empower the legislature to participate in this important event. So I do think that we must be objective when it comes to this one and rise to the legislation that asks us what to do. If we look at the report with all due respect, a big chunk of the report does speak to what you'll find in the annual report of the department. So it gives these ones. I'm not going to ask the researcher to do additional things, but I think where the additional things would come in is our own independent analysis. Now, you might be having a template that the committee section is giving you. Stuff them, because that template does not... Stuff them. I withdraw, if it's unparliamentary. Bugger them. The speaker would have ruled that it's not unparliamentary because I have not erred on anyone's integrity. I was general. No, let me come back. If whatever I'm going to raise is found in this thing called a template that the committee section is giving, then I do want to say, Chair, we've got to do something about a template that disempowers us instead of rising to what the legislation asks us to do. If the template says that you must take everything that's in the annual report and put that in there, you see, the Minister of Finance is going to speak in a few days' time. He is supposed to take this thing. All that he'll do is he'll say the following committees have given in his report, and I have no comment on it because nothing was recommended to me. That's not what we would want. We would want him to say that in public enterprises, the report that we have received has forced us to do the following. Now, this is where my difficulty is. If this is the template that says that you must do all these things out of the annual report, it then, and then there's just a few lines at the back that says we must say a few things. I'm saying all of this for the following reasons. Honourable... I also want to know what that is. If I may, the Honourable Khololo makes the right point about the Finance and Fiscal Commission report. You see, it does help us a lot. Because the Finance and Fiscal Commission report, if we have taken some of that in here, it talks broadly about did we achieve the infrastructure rollout? Did we achieve the other investment stuff and so on? And in our view, they need big money for these things. And it's not here, and we're not saying that. We're not saying that. You see, it can't be right if we say that the fiscus must be happy that there's no further infrastructure. It's not true. the plan of government, as far as I am concerned, is one that says that there must be further rollout. Now, that means we are making a direct proposal that further resources need to go to infrastructure. Let's not pick any one of them. But the truth is, the IT one, broadband to Safco, to all of them. You see, why Safco can't be turned around is Safco doesn't have financial resources to sort out these problems with the land issues. So they're stuck there. Now, no one makes a big noise. What do they need? They need resources. They need financial resources to sort out the legalities of that thing. We're not making that proposal in here to say that a government needs to do that thing. If you go to some of the other entities, you see, if you want to sort out some of the transport problems, Transnet needs to build some of these things that they've given to whoever. You told us also, this is another country that is building our trains instead of us. We're not saying that thing, and why can't we say it? It needs resources, it needs finances to get. Now, of course, the department needs its own resources to overlook all these entities. You can be excited about what the Auditor General says, but I am still on this thing that we require further resources for the department to make sure that they have proper oversight over all these entities sufficiently that they every day can say that they have been able to look at them. We're not saying that in here, and I do think that we have to say something about that in here, because that will clearly point out to the Minister of Finance that these are the resource areas that we are concerned as a committee that we would want to put in there. Now, Chair, if I'm now stuck between the template and all of that, then somehow you've got to talk to somebody that have your template, but here is our own thing that we want to add to that, that clearly directs the Minister of Finance into a direction that says that these are the things that we as a committee feel we need to. Otherwise, it's just a waste of time exercise that we are undergoing, and we're not using the opportunity to do what we are supposed to do. As I end up, I want to say, I mean, he does say it here. Let me stop there.
Maybe I just wanted to respond first on the issues of the report. That's to say that the issue of the shareholder compact, we were informed by we had a workshop with the PwC, these people from the were working with the Mervyn King. They actually said that it is expected of the portfolio committee to have access to the corporate plan. As much as they are commercially sensitive, the minister, when he talked to the committee, said that those things are commercially sensitive, so the portfolio committee can't, because they are competing in the market. So that is why it's impossible, the portfolio committee can't actually get the corporate plans of the entities. That was the advice from the minister. But the Auditor General, when they gave us a presentation in preparation for the annual report last year, they actually said that it is expected that the portfolio committee should be able to know what these people must, like Eric said, need to perform against the predetermined objectives. And then on the issue of the legislation, because the final report will be having observations, so Mr. Bostati is tabling the analysis, so the observations that the committee is making this meeting, we will be putting it under the observations of the in the report, the final report that we'll be adopting. So we expect the members of the committee to assist us in terms of observations and what kind of recommendations we will make on top of the ones that Eric has made, if Eric has augmented or we have augmented anything. And then, so the Dr. Koronov, the issue of the legislation, we will put it as the committee does note that the lack of legislation has disempowered the committee, the department to enforce some of the things that the department wants the SOCs to do, but we will await the outcomes of the TRC. I'm sure maybe it will make. We don't have to mention the TRC, but maybe we can just note that that absence of legislation has disempowered the department to enforce some of the things, because that's what they have actually reported to the portfolio committee, also to the DG. Eric will respond to that.
Just to add, thanks, Chairperson. I've noted suggestion, as the secretary has also indicated, from honorable member Dr. Kornoff, about the actual budget allocation, which is less than 200 million, and also the issue of the PRC as well as the shareholder combat. I think the secretary did explain that one. With respect to the honorable member, Connie, I think that is very important when she suggests. Honorable member Connie September. I was saying, I think it's very important, some of the suggestions that she came with, that the committee needs to have this prerogative to include some of the suggestions in terms of how much the department may get in terms of the infrastructure and everything else. But I also think procedurally, because you'll find that it's around this time when the SOEs engage the department in terms of the shareholder compact, because it's the shareholder compact where then the committee can say you need to include ABCD, because those shareholder compacts, they then are quantified in terms of how much the SOE will need to fulfill or to meet these objectives or to meet these targets. So I also think that the committee can bring that issue up of shareholder compact, so that instead of when the pre-report comes in, and then the committee will say we need to give more money so that they can fulfill this, but the financial year will be long gone by then, and the shareholder compact and the money that has been given, funded actually by the budget, will be in the shareholder compact. So I think the shareholder compact issue will need to be brought up so that the committee can engage and say, we see these are the things that we want to achieve, these are your target, but also we feel as a committee that we need, for an example, for broadband in Franco, this is what we need, we expect you to do, to reach out to the underdeveloped areas. Then thereafter, then that's when the department will be able, or they also go to Treasury and say, these are our targets, this is our mandate, these are our predetermined objectives, now you need to fund us, instead of saying it right now, because right now you'll find that by this time the shoulder compact has been signed between the minister, or they are about to be signed. I'm not sure, maybe someone from the department can explain that. Thanks, Chairman.
No, that's wrong, Eric. Parliament independently must take decisions of what they deem correct. Their processes, let them carry on to go and have negotiations. If we did that last year, it would have been in there this year if there was agreement with what Parliament is saying. We must separate our role and their role, and this is what we feel as Parliament, this power that has been given to us, to say this is how we feel after we've done that analysis. So whether they take it up in the budget of 2014-15 doesn't matter. We're bringing to the attention of the executive that this is what we think the direction should be in.
Let me be more specific. We concentrate on conclusion and recommendations. Number one, I think the paragraph on PRC to say they must release their findings, put to rest the speculations on SOC realignments with other departments. If that does not happen, we have egg on our face. So that paragraph I suggest we delete, because we don't know. What happens if they don't make a recommendation about the realignment of SOCs, which I I heard a rumor they don't make it. So I think we should be very careful on that one. I haven't seen the report. Number two, on the DPE, I would suggest in the recommendations, conclusions, we talk, one, about the capacity and oversight, and two issues. One, the shareholder compact. I think we need to have impact sight of the shareholder compact as a recommendations. And two, that what you talk about, objectives and outcomes, that we make sure we monitor the implementation. That's the issue. It doesn't cost money, but you need to monitor the implementation of the outcomes and objectives. And secondly, on DPE, I think the issue with the Auditor General and what you have said and what we've discussed, it's critical to retain critical staff or quality staff or critically scarce skills in the department. So I think that must be a recommendation of the committee. Thanks.
I was present in this meeting.
Are we now? The 6th of September.
just want the last sentence of the recommendation. The committee would further investigate the procurement challenges that the NEL experienced with Armschool. How are we going to do that? But we can't investigate. I have a problem with that sentence. I mean, at the end of the day, we're going to group all the recommendations and proposals, and then we will come in 6 months and say, but we didn't investigate. So I have a, somebody must remind me why we said we will investigate the challenges between the NEL and Armschool. That's my point. What challenges and what investigation powers do we have to investigate between state and companies?
I think the issue there was that the NEL is saying that every time they do procurement with Armschool treats them like a private sector, so there's a certain amount of money that they need to, I don't know what they call that amount. Yes, a guarantee something, and then that indeed they lost so much money in terms of that process.
It's a guarantee. It's like a hinge. So what? I suggest we rephrase it like that. There's a problem with the guarantees, and we will take it up with the department. But to investigate, I think, is the wrong thing. So put it, the problem is the guarantees and whatever we discuss, and we will raise it with the department to see whether we can get a solution.
Just make sure that members have the latest program. What program? Okay. Honorable Corona?
Just two issues. We adopt the meetings now.
The minutes.
The minutes.
Yes.
And I think on the last two, we made a recommendation for Transnet. They should report back progress made by the end of October.
Yes.
The end of this month. Mm-hmm. I think we must just follow it.
We must just
write a letter to say we adopted the minutes today, and we said by the end of October you should report back on the
yes.
whatever, the visits, oversight reports.
Similarly, with ESCOM, we said the board members must visit the sites in ESCOM in order. So I think a letter must be sent to ESCOM to say we adopted it today and we ask your board members to visit your rural sites.
Honorable Michael.
Chair, I found the minutes. It's so important to me that Honorable Kornhoff doesn't think I'm deaf. They were sent to me on the 18th of September. And
yeah, it's that's
the
quite a long
the
time.
Fourth term.
Yeah, that's a long time ago.
And well, that's the only one that you've received.
No. We
and it's got a date
for
the 16th and 17th.
That's why I said, to some, I just ensure that all members have the latest.
So we're only meeting on the 16th, in other words, the Tuesday the 16th. Okay.
This brings us to the end of the meeting. The meeting is adjourned. The meeting is adjourned. This meeting is adjourned.